Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
Redmond, the best form he's shown since he broke the British record.
He was in great shape, you know, he was had a chance, possibility of maybe getting a medal there.
The Cuban Hernandez has got Redmond to aim at, and so too in lane number three is Steve Lewis, but Redmond's got off very fast indeed, and so too is Ismail of Qatar. Down the back straight, he's the fractional leader. Bada of Nigeria has gone very quickly, and Redmond has broken down. He's on the track, kneeling down, and Derek Redmond, on his injury problem, the jinx has struck again.
Running down the back straight, I heard a funny clap or a pop, and I honestly, for a split second, thought I'd been shot. And then, obviously, I realised I've pulled a hamstring. And then when the pain sort of died down, I remembered where I was and what I was doing, and I remember thinking, quick, you're in the Olympic semi-final, get up and start running. And I got to the 200-metre mark after hobbling 50 metres and looked across and all the guys had finished, and it pretty much hit me that, you know, it ain't going to happen, it's all over.
I would have laid there. You know, to be honest, there's no way I would have got up, because hamstring, when you've got a hamstring, you know you've got a hamstring.
He just wants to finish. His dad's trying to run onto the track to stop him. He's going to tell him, Derek, don't.
The old man went to put his arms around me, and I was just about to try and push him off because I thought it was someone else. I didn't see him. He sort of jogged from behind. And I said, all right, you know, get me back into lane five. I want to finish.
Now in the greatest arena in sport, he's getting the cheer of the games.
It was back in 1992. The Olympics were best known for Derek Redmond and that scene with his dad, as well as the Dream Team. Speaking of Dream Team, ain't it good to have the band back together for a Sunday? So, where are you guys even sitting? I know you're sitting somewhere here. Where are you, there you are. No. Where are you at, Alex? There you are. Okay, I can't see you back there. Just that scene there with, you know, pulling a hamstring right at the, you know, most important moment of his life, and having his dad come out there and not tell him just to, you know, go sit down, but to just encourage him and lift him up and come alongside him. That is actually the most beautiful, perfect picture of the word encouragement in Scripture. The Greek means to come alongside and to support and to help, to pick you up when you're down, to help you finish and run the race with perseverance that's been set marked out for you. And that's a picture there of what Derek Redmond and his father showed us at the 1992 Olympics. And in this series, we've just been talking about things that, you know, what is it that you love, or what is it I love about Essential Church? You know, what is it we love about our church? And one of the things I really love about Essential is just the encouraging nature in the atmosphere of the church. And you know, it's whether you like or hate social media, it doesn't matter. The beautiful thing of social media is you get sort of a window in on the life of people that you never would have seen before. And on top of that, you get a window and picture into the life of a church like you've never seen before. And what I mean by that is I'm on Facebook, but I'm not much of a contributor to it. I just don't really think anybody really cares what I ate for dinner or where I'm on vacation or things like that. So I don't post a whole lot. I almost feel like a voyeur. I check it almost every day just because it's, you know, something fun to kind of do. But I mostly just read all the stuff y'all put out there and, you know, laugh at it, enjoy it. I mostly watch videos just of random stuff. But one of the true joys as a pastor is seeing the way that you all encourage one another. And when I see somebody post something where they're feeling down or a setback's happened, what I'll see is just a list and string of encouragement. And most of the time, the majority of the encouraging words are on there from people from your church. And it's just a beautiful picture of what the church was intended and designed to be. And if you think about the example that we had from Christ, it was this picture of encouragement. He's constantly encouraging his disciples who were struggling and always falling down and always making mistakes and always lifting them back up. And as I always say every week, this is my favorite passage. Well, one of my favorite passages is actually John 21. I preach on it probably about four times a year. And it's where Jesus comes and he restores Peter on the beach. After Peter's denied him and betrayed him, he comes to him and he says, Peter, you're the guy I want leading this thing. You're the one I want out in front. And this issue is not going to define who you are. It's not going to be the last thing said about you. What you're going to be known for, Peter, is preaching the Sermon on Pentecost that begins this whole thing off, and 3,000 people are going to be joined to this movement. Far more people than ever came and followed me in my lifetime will follow you after your very first sermon. You will do far more than I've ever done, Peter. You will do this. You will accomplish it. And this is what you'll be known for. And just that encouragement that he speaks into his life. And then you move into the book of Acts, and one of the very first characters we're introduced to in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 4, is this guy named Barnabas. That actually wasn't his name. That was just what people called him because he was just such an encourager. In the Greek, it means the encouraging one or son of encouragement or just that encouraging guy. If you need some encouragement, you go to Barnabas. And it's actually Barnabas is the one who reaches out to Paul. Paul was a guy who was persecuting the church, and everybody was afraid of him. He ends up beginning a relationship with Jesus Christ, and nobody will give him the time of day or give him an opportunity, and it's Barnabas that reaches out. It's Barnabas is the one who sort of leads the way and says, I'll put my faith in you. I'll trust in you, Paul. I believe in you. I believe in what God's doing in you, and he gives this guy a chance. And then when Barnabas gets kind of the opportunity of a lifetime up in Antioch, he says, you know, I know somebody who could really, really, really be perfect for this situation. And he calls up his buddy Paul, and he says, Paul, I need you here. And so Paul comes up, and that's where Paul really gets his start in ministry. Then they set out on a missionary journey. It's interesting, on this journey, they set out with, it's Paul and it's Barnabas, another guy named John Mark. And John Mark was right there supporting everything when the going was good, and when the going got bad, as you know, some people often do, they bail. And so Mark bails on him, and it kind of rubs Paul pretty much the wrong way. Well, a couple years later, they're ready to go out on another journey. And who shows up? Wouldn't it guess it? John Mark. Hey, guys, I'm ready to go. I had a good time last time. He's like, no, I'm not taking quitters with me. I'm not taking people who bail at the first sign of adversity. And Barnabas steps in, as he was known to do, and he says, come on, Paul. You got to give this guy another shot. And Paul's like, no. I know who he is. I know the character of this guy. I'm not taking him anywhere with me. And so after some back and forth, Barnabas says, okay, Paul, why don't you go out with Silas, but I believe in John Mark, and I believe he deserves a second chance, and so Barnabas and John Mark go out. Well, as you read through the way things play out, later on in life, while Paul's in a prison cell, he writes and he says, could you send to me John Mark? Because he is such an encouragement and so useful to me in my life. Why do you think that is? Because a guy like Barnabas saw into him that he needed a second chance and encourage him. You actually probably know John Mark just by simply calling him Mark, because he's the one who recorded down the very first gospel, which then Luke wrote a gospel and Matthew wrote a gospel and John wrote a gospel. You know, would we have any of that if it wasn't for the encouragement? Like, it's sort of like right now, there's a lot of sort of documentary biographies going on right now about the life of John McCain. And so if you watch them, you'll see people sort of, you know, behind the scenes who made him who he was. If you were to watch a life story biography on the book of Mark or a life story biography on the book of Paul, who do you think would be prominent in those biographies? Barnabas, because he came along with the encouragement. And then you see Paul doing this for other people within the same kind of light that was done for him. He writes letters. A lot of the letters we have are what we call the books of the Bible, like to Corinth and Thessalonica and Philippi, were letters Paul is writing them to encourage them. He says to the Philippians, a note that probably has encouraged many of you. He says, he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. And there are a lot of times where you feel like as if God's given up on me, he's done with me. Like Peter, I just need to go back to fishing, go back to what I used to do best, because this whole thing of following after Christ is not working for me. And Paul says, no, The one who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it and carry it on to completion. He also writes to Timothy. And Timothy's in a very difficult situation. He's ministering to the church in Ephesus. Later on, John would write to the church at Ephesus and talk about how they've lost their first love. They've lost that love and feeling. They need to get it back. Ba-bump, ba-bump, ba-bump. And here you've got Timothy ministering in this very difficult situation, and he's just a young guy, and he says this to him in 1 Timothy 4. He says, "Don't let anybody look down on you because of your age." Having gone into the ministry at a very young age, I was, 23, 24 years old when I became a senior pastor. And that was a verse that encouraged me, because it's both when you're really young and when you're getting old that people begin to look down on you. My kids are starting to get to the age where they're going to begin to look down on dad. Like right now, dad knows some things, right? Somewhere between 8th grade and 12th grade, dad's too old, isn't he? And then somewhere between 12th grade and a few failures in life, dad all of a sudden gets back a little bit of wisdom. And then he fades off into oblivion again. But so he writes that. He says, you know, don't let anybody look down on you because of your age. These are letters of encouragement. He's doing this to lift them up. It's what the church does. It's what it should be known for. It's what we're all about. And then when the church is described as its purpose over in Hebrews chapter 10, they're going through some very difficult times collectively as a church, and he writes them. He says, you know, do not give up meeting together. I'll start back in verse 24. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. He says, let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day approaching. And there's a word used in this passage that actually shows up twice in there. It's actually found 100 times in the New Testament. It's a word that perfectly and beautifully describes what the church is supposed to be, what God's vision for the church was. And like a lot of things, when you translate from one language to another, we don't have a good word that sort of summarizes this in the best way. And so we actually use two English words to translate it in most translations. It just says one another. And it's not just talking like, oh, y'all. It's a unique kind of one another. It's the difference between an aggregation and a congregation. So an aggregation is like a bag of marbles. They're just there. They happen to be in the same place at the same time. But there's nothing really, there's no force connecting. There's no lifeblood flowing through them. It's the difference between being a bag of marbles and a patch of grapes. See, the patch of grapes are connected. They're from the same source. That was the vision that Jesus had for the church. He says, I am the vine, you are the branches, and if you remain in me, you will bear much fruit. It's this imagery of the grapes. It's the same imagery you have throughout the Old Testament, that the nation of God would be like a vineyard that God is growing, and that, you know, it is this cluster of grapes, and the grapes are connected. They're not just a bag of marbles together for a moment and then dispersed. They are There's a unity there. There's a sameness there. There's a oneness there. What happens to one will infect the others. And so there's a one anotherness to this collection. Some people, when they think about church, they think of it sort of as this combination between rock concert and classroom. And if you have a band like you saw assembled this morning, you would think it probably might be a rock concert that everybody is here. Or right now, as I am lecturing you and you may be taking notes, it may feel like a classroom. But you see, if you went to a concert up at the oceanfront, you went there probably separately from everybody who was there, you enjoyed the music, and then you left. Like a bag of marbles, there's really nothing connecting you. If you've gone to class, it's like a bag of marbles. You go and you learn, and then you go home. And that's a very different setting than what God's vision is or the picture is of a church, that there's a one-anotherness to hear. I've had some people say, you know, why can't we just do church at home? I mean, after all, I've been watching the live stream cast. I can watch it from home on Monday on the, you know, the production value. Why do I have to be there? And I say, you know, there's a lot of things you can get just on your own, but there's a lot of stuff you're going to miss. Not only that, there's a lot of other people who are going to miss out on you. See, because you're just as much part of this as everybody you might see on stage or whatever you would call somebody who's important or whatever. It's not like that. I remember years ago, I was in a hospital room talking with somebody, and they said, you know, I feel like I need to get baptized and want to get baptized, but I don't really feel like I'm really a Christian yet. And I said, why? We went through all the, theologically, everything checked. And he says, I said, why? He says, because I sit in worship, and I look around the room, and there's just something different going on with other people in the room than what's going on with me. To me, it's just words on the screen, it's just music, but it's like, I look to the left, and I look to my right, and there's people, there's something going on there between them and God that I don't have, that I'm not experiencing. And you see, just by you being there in the Spirit and worshiping, it's a testimony to somebody. It speaks to somebody. It creates a longing in somebody's heart to have that kind of relationship with God. They see that. You're being observed. You're being watched in that moment. There's a reason why during the sermons, oftentimes I'll ask questions or I'll do something to see if I can get a response from you, because it's a way that everybody else in the room can realize I'm not the only one. Like last week, I talked about what I loved about this church is that all of y'all basically are a bunch of sinners, and you guys kind of laughed about it. And not that it's okay that we're all sinners, it's just the fact that it's what a church is. It's a collection of imperfect people. And, you know, after giving that message, we go out to the beach, and I couldn't help but laugh because, you know, a dear friend of mine brought a cornhole board that had Jim Beam written across it. And I was laughing for two reasons. One, of course somebody in our congregation has a Jim Beam cornhole board. Second of all, of course I don't see anything wrong with bringing it to church. It's just, it's who you are. It's who we are. And, you know, I love that because you realize I am not the only one who deals with this. You know, when I say, you know, show of hands, who struggles with this? And most of the people in the room raise their hand up. You realize I'm not the only one. Satan is whispering to each and every one of you, you're the only one. The only one has it so hard, the only one dealing with this, and you just need to keep your mouth shut, and someday maybe you could be gifted and blessed to be like everybody else in the room. And when you raise your hand and say, me too, it just shoots a hole right through that argument of Satan. You know, there's other times where, like, when you stand up for communion, come forward, there's a reason we don't pass plates for communion. There's actually a thought behind that, because there's something about the testimony of everybody standing up in the room collectively saying, I'm a sinner, I need what Jesus Christ did on the cross for me. And just seeing that and just the emotion of that and the ambiance and the atmosphere, that's a reason why we invested in the patio out there, to give you more time after service to build relationships and make connections. There's a reason why Pastor Chris gets up here every single week and is pushing table groups and small groups. Because you need to have that intentionality where you're saying, I want to intentionally do life in a one another setting. I love the way C.S. Lewis talks about this in Mere Christianity. He says, so Jesus works in all sorts of ways, through nature, through our own bodies, through books, sometimes through the experiences that we have, which may at the time even seem anti-Christian. But above all, he works on us through one another. We are mirrors that reflect Christ. We are carriers of Christ to one another. And that's the picture of what the church is and was always intended to be. And so he says, as you come together as one another, he says to consider. And as you break down in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24, he says, consider. The word to consider is to give thought through, to kind of think through a list of options, to sort of go through it in your mind. And this is what you do in your own mind about your problems all the time. You sometimes spend, you know, all night thinking through and considering your issues and considering your options and wondering what's the best choice, what's the best idea. The problem that each of us have, though, is we are blindly self-righteous and we're blind to our faults, and so often we just need another perspective to come in and say, have you considered this? And you see, what you need is more than just somebody who can take a sort of 5-minute radio call in, here's my problem, Dr. Laura, tell me what I need to do kind of thing. You need somebody who also stays up at night and considers your situation. And God's vision and picture of the church is that there would be a collection of people, this cluster of grapes that come together that are spending their time and their mind share thinking through your marriage and your addictions and your problems and helping you come up with an ordered solution. That's not what a bartender or a hairdresser does. They just tell you what you want to believe or what you want to do. This is somebody who looks through and cares, you know, counts through all the options and gives you a list to consider to help you make a wise choice. And their response may end up being one of the two things you see in here. It says, therefore, let us... It says, consider how we may spur one another. And then he also goes on to talk about encouraging. These are kind of two sides of the same coin. The word spur is actually a perfect translation of this word. It means to come alongside and, like a cowboy, give it a spur. And if you want to get a horse to move, there's sometimes you can just go, come on, come on, right on, and it'll start to move, right? But there are sometimes when you need to give it a little spur. Now, I don't want any letters from Peter or anybody else out there. I just letting you know, in life, even if you don't do it to your horse, that's fine, whatever. In life, sometimes you need to somebody come along and give you a kick in the pants. You do. Sometimes you need to be confronted. Proverbs says that the wounds of a friend can be trusted. Sometimes you need a friend to come in and wound you and say, what you're doing is not right. This isn't good, this isn't healthy, this isn't productive, you got to cut this out. And that's actually what Paul would do a lot of times in his letters. He'd say, listen, if my letter hurts you, I feel bad, but I don't feel bad if it brought you to repentance. So you need to cut that out, or I'm going to come down there in a couple years and sort it out. It'd take him a little while to travel back then than it does today. And that's what he's doing. A lot of times he's giving letters of reprimand, and you need somebody who can come into your life and get in your face, and you need to give somebody that kind of permission in your life. But you also need a picture of what you saw in that video of somebody who can come alongside and encourage you and pick you up when you've fallen down. One sort of gives you a kick in the pants, and the other one calls you forward and comes alongside. One kind of comes alongside and says, no, no, you're not doing this anymore. Gives you a little poke or a little elbow jab. And the other puts his arm around her, lifts up and supports and says, I'll walk with you the rest of the way till we can finish this thing. And all of that is designed, he says that, he says in here in Hebrews 10, he says, and let us consider, think through the options of how we could spur one another on, and do not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encourage one another all the more as you see the day approaching and the adversity that's coming and it increases. And in the middle of all that, what he says, what he wants you to do is to, so you can be spurred on towards love and good deeds. That you would love more, that you would exhibit more of the love and the heart of Christ and the actions of Christ. And what I love about church the most, and what I love about you all the most, is when you get to be the church. Like we said last week, it's not just about going to church or attending the church. It's about being the church. That the church isn't here for me. I am the church, and I'm here for the city. I'm here for the world. I'm here to bring about the redemption that God has in store for all of humanity that begun at the cross and is continuing out his work through my life. And so, you know, we've done this in, you know, it's different times in the past. Most of the time we give you opportunities to do this outside of the confines of a Sunday morning, but I just wanted to give you an opportunity to do this right now. That's why there is a sheet of paper on your seat with a pen. You can do it on that sheet of paper and pen, or you can do it, you can send somebody a text, you could write an email, and just want to give you the opportunity to encourage. It's what the church should be known for. It's what we should be doing a good job of, and so there may be somebody in your life right now that you just want to send a note of encouragement to. If you can't think of anybody right off, I'm just going to put up two names on the board. One is John and one is Jackie. Both of them are people who have been a part of Essential Church. Right now, they're in prison and can't be here this morning. And just have the opportunity to write them a letter. And just think what it would be like to be sitting in prison day in and day out, be separated from the ones you love. And just be able to write a letter and just say, I just want to let you know, I just want to lift you up and encourage you. I wish you could be here right now. And I look forward to the day when you can be here. And this isn't going to define you. And write them a letter. If you don't know them, it's not an opportunity to spur them, okay? Just say that right now. It's an opportunity for you to encourage, to come alongside. And so just take some time. And so if you write it to John or to Jacqueline, just write their name on the outside of the sheet of paper, and we'll have an opportunity for you to bring it up and turn it in on your way out the doors. If you want to write a note to somebody in the church, you don't know their address, that's fine. Just write their name, their full name. And of course, if they're in our database, we will send them that letter in the mail. If you want to write to somebody who's not in the church and you know their address, write it, address the outside of, you know, the back sheet of the paper, and we will do the hardest part of this whole thing, which I know, which for me, I write a lot of stuff I never mail. We'll actually address it on an envelope, put a stamp on it, and put it in the mail. Or some of you right now just pull out your smartphone and you just can send somebody a text, post something on their Facebook page, write them a letter, write them an email. I'm just going to give you some time to do that, to respond as our worship team once again leads us for a while. Then we'll come back and finish out with communion.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.